Hello, my name is Lily, and today I will be reading the Salem News. This is the Thursday, February 19th, 2026 edition, and we're starting off with this article written by Bobby Grady, titled Investigation into Lillie Jean Sinking Underway. A multi-agency investigation led by the Coast Guard is deploying deep-sea sonar technology to create a map of the seafloor in hopes of finding the fishing vessel Lillie Jean, which sank suddenly late last month with all seven hands lost. Local and state leaders, as well as representatives from the Coast Guard, National Oceanographic and Atmospheric Administration, NOAA, National Transportation Safety Board, NTSB, and the Massachusetts Department of Environmental Police and State Police on Wednesday outlined what has already been done, what is being investigated, and what investigators are hoping to find. Making its return to port, the 72-foot Lillie Jean sank January 30th, about 22 miles off the Gloucester coast, without making a mayday call. The Coast Guard was alerted by an emergency position indicating radio beacon, or EPIRB. Such beacons can activate without human intervention when they hit water. The seven crew lost were Captain Accursio Gus Sanfilippo, Paul Beale and his son Paul Beale Jr., all of Gloucester, John Rosanidis and Sean Theron, both of Peabody, Freeman Short of the Scituate Marshfield area, and NOAA Fishery Observer Jada Samet of Rockport. State Senate Minority Leader Bruce Tarr, Republican from Gloucester, outlined the investigation's three-phase approach and what he called an unprecedented effort to locate the Lillie Jean during a press conference Wednesday with representatives of the agencies involved. Quote, "There are multiple forms of investigation happening right now, and they are all working in parallel. They are working in a complementary fashion," Tarr said. "One will not obstruct or delay the other, and they will provide us with good information." "One of the most haunting things about grief or loss at sea is the not knowing," he said. "Answering those questions requires a tremendous amount of effort." Governor Maura Healey echoed the enormity of the collaborative effort and called the seven lives lost, quote, "the heart and the soul of the fishing community." Quote, "The way that we support the families is by standing with them and standing with this community," Healey said. The investigation's first phase was the initial search for the vessel. Following the sinking, the Coast Guard spent 27 hours on the water searching for the Lillie Jean. While the vessel was not recovered, the body of Sanfilippo, an empty life raft, and debris consistent with items that may float off a deck were found. In the weeks since and currently, investigators are in phase two of the investigation. Tarr said this phase includes assessing data collected by the many involved parties. So far, investigators have learned the boat is approximately 350 feet underwater, and there's still a significant amount of topographical data to be analyzed before any firm conclusions can be reached. The topographical information was collected in searches February 3rd through the 4th and February 13th through the 14th. The first search was conducted by the NOAA vessel Gloria Michelle, which came up from Woods Hole in Falmouth. Aboard the vessel was side-scan sonar technology from the Environmental Police. The technology allowed investigators to create an initial topographical map of the ocean floor. Results of that mapping prompted the dispatch of NOAA's 208-foot survey vessel, Thomas Jefferson, a larger, more sophisticated version of the Gloria Michelle. Investigators are analyzing the data it recovered. According to John Hare, director of NOAA's Northeast Fisheries Science Center, investigators are looking at the map created by the Thomas Jefferson and comparing it to other ocean floor maps in hopes to find, quote, anomalies or differences. Quote, "The idea is that you'd be able to detect something on the bottom that's different from the topography of the area," Hare said. Depending on the results of what the Thomas Jefferson found, the state environmental police may use a remotely operated underwater vehicle to capture photographs of the anomalies, according to environmental police Colonel John Monaghan. However, he said, there needs to be very steady waters for the remotely operated underwater vehicle to capture good photographs because it is on a tether. Quote, the remotely operated underwater vehicle is something that we would send down just to look and see if something is what we think it is, Monaghan said. In order to do that, we have to wait for calm seas, so that's what we're waiting for. Commander Brett Ego of the Coast Guard's Northeast District in Boston is the leading investigating officer. He said the goal moving forward for all investigating parties is to, quote, understand what happened and identify any measures that can be taken to improve the safety of life and property at sea. He said it could take months to get answers and information will be released on a public website once it is available. Other investigating parties include the National Transportation Safety Board, an independent federal agency that investigates major marine tragedies, among other things. Marcel Muse, an NTSB marine accident investigator, said the organization is joining the Coast Guard in this effort by assisting in data collection and will produce its own independent report in the future. Phase 3 of the collaborative effort includes supporting the families of those lost at sea. The Gloucester Community Fishing Preservation Fund, a nonprofit which supports fishermen and their families, is collecting money for the Lily Jean Cruz families. Donations can be made at fvlilyjeanfund.org, spelled L-I-L-Y-J-E-A-N, or through Cape Ann Savings Bank at its branches at 109 Main Street, 38 Rogers Street, and 4 Schoolhouse Road, all in Gloucester. 247 Main Street in Rockport and 17 Beach Street in Manchester by the Sea as well, or its website capeannsavings.bank. Next, we have this article by Michael McHugh titled Historical Commission, No Vote on Salem Bandstand Yet. The Salem Historical Commission voted on Wednesday night to continue a discussion for the second phase of a proposed renovation of the Salem Common Bandstand with an updated ADA accessibility ramp and restoration work roughly estimated to cost around $1 million. The plan, part of the city's signature parks initiative, focused on improvements and preservation efforts in 6 of Salem's public parks and open spaces, has 2 phases that include comprehensive structural repairs, updates to electrical wiring and lighting, and accessibility compliance for the nearly 100-year-old structure ahead of the city's quadricentennial celebration in 2026. Phase 1 was completed in 2020 and included replacement of the bulkhead over the basement stairs, as well as steel railings, a concrete apron, slabs, and stone dust path. The design team, led by Structures North Consulting Engineers and Spencer Preservation Group, estimated the second phase of restoration, including repointing, masonry, and electrical work, to cost between $545,535 and $747,845, with the new ramp design costing an additional $285,000, though a specific full cost estimate for the ramp has not been completed. The new ramp design is located to the left of the front stairs of the bandstand, with the 2 slopes separated some distance from the structure itself, and a bridge connecting it to the main structure at its highest point. The current pull-away ramp design is estimated to be slightly less than the $330,000 switchback ramp from the previous design. Historic Salem, Inc., while in support of the upgrades in electrical wiring, lighting, and general repairs, were initially opposed to the inclusion of a switchback ADA accessibility ramp that the organization says will, quote, degrade the architectural significance and visual composition of the structure. A letter from the organization's president, Richard Lindman, spoke against the current pull-away ramp design, but expressed approval for a circular ramp surrounding the structure, which Lindemann said would better preserve architectural integrity. Quote, "The common bandstand reflects centuries-old classical design elements," the letter from Historic Salem Inc. reads. "With that history in mind, the bandstand should have a symmetrical circular ramp that curves around the base to preserve the architectural integrity. The new ramp should encompass and expand the existing base." Historical Commission Chair Vijay Joyce also expressed disappointment in the design not preserving the balanced, more symmetrical design of the structure's colonial revival style. Quote, "One of the big things around colonial revival is that it is about balance and proportion, i.e. the spatial relationships of the structure to itself," Joyce said. "So when I see the ramp off to one side, it's not necessarily respecting that." John Wathney, the president of Structures North Consulting Engineers, argued against the idea of a wraparound ramp providing a greater level of symmetry and further asserted that having a ramp that is not fully encompassing the perimeter of the structure better preserves the original design. Quote, "The idea of the wraparound is really only symmetrical from an airplane because you've got an inclined surface going up," Wathney said. "You will never see any symmetry other than in the footprint of the structure. It's also by far the most expensive option, and we'd be entombing a major portion of the original structure. I think we need to respect the original designer and give it homage by having a ramp that's physically separated from the existing structure." Doug Manley, principal of architecture at Spencer Preservation Group, explained that feedback received from the Salem Commission on Disabilities for a previous wraparound ramp design was a more roundabout way to access the gazebo. Quote, "One of the things the Commission on Disabilities said to us was that it seemed like a very circuitous way to get there, and it seemed like a long way to travel," Manley said. "Because when you wrap it around, you are doing more travel than the minimum you would need to get there." Historical Commission member Milo Martinez suggested that the ramp's entrance to the bandstand be moved slightly further to the left from the stairs in order to better preserve the front facade of the gazebo. Quote, "I'm certainly not opposed to the solution of this being pulled away and there being a bridge over to the bandstand," Martinez said. "I think that this could work if it would be possible to move the entrance onto the gazebo so that when you're looking at the front of the gazebo, the first three openings are intact." The Historical Commission voted unanimously to continue the discussion to their next meeting on March 4th, primarily due to the design still needing approval from the Architectural Access Board, which the designer said was expected to be received without issue. Next is this article by Christian M. Wade, titled, "Judge Tosses Lawsuit by Anti-Abortion Groups." A federal judge has tossed out a lawsuit against Governor Maura Healey and reproductive rights groups over a state-funded campaign targeting anti-abortion, quote, pregnancy crisis center operators. In a ruling Tuesday, U.S. District Court Judge Leo Sorokin approved a blanket motion to dismiss the 2024 suit filed by Massachusetts Liberty Legal Center on behalf of several pregnancy centers after more than a year of wrangling over the legal challenge. The lawsuit, filed on behalf of Your Options Medical Center in Revere and others, alleged that the state and equity now targeted them with a, quote, campaign of harassment, suppression, and threats, and asked the court to grant a preliminary injunction blocking the ad campaign. But Sorokin said the plaintiffs failed to show that the state's public education campaign specifically, quote, threatened them, or that it sought to criticize the pro-life religious views of the center operators. He said the state's ad campaign focused on the, quote, quality of their medical services and advertising practices, and didn't, quote, suggest any hostility to religion. Similarly, broad, public-facing campaign statements criticizing the practices of Pregnancy resource centers, generally as dangerous public health threats, constitute permissible government expression, not unconstitutional threats of enforcement, he wrote in the 59-page ruling. In 2024, the State Department of Public Health partnered with Equity Now and other advocacy groups on a new campaign to educate the public about the, quote, dangers and potential harm of anti-abortion centers advocates say are providing misleading information to women. The $1 million campaign blanketed social media platforms, billboards, and radio, and ads are emblazoned on MBTA buses, trains, and depots. But the campaign was challenged in court by the Liberty Legal Center, the legal wing of the conservative Massachusetts Family Institute, which alleged in court filings that the campaign has forced crisis centers, quote, to operate in a culture of fear and harassment, and that they face, quote, unprecedented investigations, including unnecessary subpoenas, despite previous state investigations clearing them of any wrongdoing. The Conservative American Center for Law and Justice, which has helped President Donald Trump fight his legal battles, filed a legal brief in support of the suit. It argued the campaign targeting pregnancy centers is part of a strategy to, quote, silence the anti-abortion movement. But Attorney General Andrea Campbell, whose office represented Healey, and lawyers for Equity Now argued in court that the state's public education campaign hasn't deprived the pregnancy centers of their free speech rights or interfered with their operations. Pregnancy crisis centers, which advertise free services and counseling for women struggling with unplanned pregnancies, have emerged as the latest battleground in abortion access following the Supreme Court's 2022 ruling overturning federal protections. But Healey and women's reproductive rights groups argue the facilities are funded by anti-abortion groups with the sole intention of blocking women from getting abortions. Some communities have moved to limit or ban the centers amid complaints that they are using deceptive advertising and providing misinformation. Abortion is legal in Massachusetts under a 2020 law, but advocates say the state has become a destination for women coming from other states that banned the procedure or tightened their laws following the Supreme Court's ruling. State leaders have also taken steps to shield providers and patients from potential lawsuits filed by groups of other states where abortion is now restricted. This next article is written by Michael McHugh, titled School Board to Meet Behind Closed Doors to Discuss Interim Superintendent Pick. The school committee will meet in executive session next week to discuss candidates for the role of interim superintendent as Steven Zreich leaves the Salem Public Schools to take over as the state's next Secretary of Education next month. Due to the timing of Zreich's departure, Mayor Dominic Pangallo said the school committee will be looking to name an interim superintendent for at least the remainder of the school year while outlining the process for selecting Salem's next superintendent. Pangallo, who also serves as chair of the school committee, said he couldn't comment at this time whether the committee would be considering internal or external candidates for the next superintendent. Quote, I think it's safe to say that Salem Public Schools are in a very strong position right now and that we have some incredible talent in the district, Pangallo said. But we're also in a position to be a district that is competitive with attracting high-caliber administrators and leaders from across the Commonwealth. Zreich's transition to State Education Secretary is occurring at a transformative moment for Salem, with the new high school project to be chief among the concerns of the next superintendent. Quote, there's a number of things that are going to be critically important for the next superintendent, whoever that may be, and the new high school project is certainly one of them, Pangallo said. It's probably the most significant capital project. Planning for the creation of that new facility, and then also bringing the programming into that building in a way that maintains the positive progress we've we've seen, apologies, at Salem High School over the last several years. Other important work currently underway in the district that Pangalo highlighted includes the expansion of the district's dual language program into the middle school grades, starting with Collins Middle School next year, adding more Chapter 74 programs for career technical education at the high school, updating the district's strategic plan, and the merging of Carleton Innovation and Saltonstall schools at the Saltonstall building. Quote, ensuring that the reconfiguration of the elementary schools proceeds smoothly is important to making sure that all our students, their families, and the educators in those schools are supported in the transition process and then supported in the years moving forward after that consolidation takes place, Pangalo said. Quote, there's a lot on the plate for Salem Public Schools, and we're in a strong position, but there's certainly lots of work to do, he said. Next up is this announcement, Community Baby Shower for expectant parents to be hosted in March. Free newborn essentials for expectant parents will be available while supplies last during a community baby shower at the Saltonstall School on March 21st. The free event will run from 1 to 3 p.m. at the school, located at 211 Lafayette Street in Salem. It will also include information about local resources, activities, and raffle prizes, which will be drawn at 2:30 p.m. The event is being hosted by the North Shore Public Health Collaborative and North Shore Mother Visiting Partnership. Registration is encouraged. Visit tinyurl.com/northshorebaby to register. For questions about the event, you can email northshorepublichealth@salem.com. Next up, we have this article from the advice page. It is titled Trump RX and How It Works with Medicare Part D. This is advice from Tony. And it says, hello, Tony. I am a 68-year-old male on Medicare Advantage plan. On a Medicare Advantage plan through my last employer. How does the new Trump RX plan fit into Medicare? Currently, Express Scripts manages my Part D plan. Thank you, Tony. And that was from Mike from Cypress, Texas. And Tony says, hi, Mike. On February 5th, 2026, Trump RX, the new federal direct-to-consumer web platform for discounted prescription drugs, was officially launched by the Trump administration. TrumpRx.gov aims to provide prices for many popular medicines similar to the lowest paid by other developed nations. It is important that those enrolled in a Part D plan or employer/individual health insurance with prescription drug benefits know that TrumpRx will not lower the cost of your prescriptions in that specific plan. The Trump RX coupon is for cash-only purchases, and the costs do not count toward your Medicare Part D deductible or out-of-pocket maximum. Research which way costs less, either one, your prescription Part D plan's copays or cost of the covered prescription, or two, the prescription drug's cost with the Trump RX coupon discount. It is also important to know that the Trump RX discount prescription drug plan is not considered a creditable Medicare Part D plan. Using Trump RX or a discount prescription drug platform such as GoodRx will not keep you from getting a penalty for not enrolling in a Part D plan. I would strongly advise those turning 65 not to wait, but to enroll in a Part D plan during their 7-month Medicare Initial Enrollment Period, IEP. Otherwise, you could be subjected to a Part D penalty. The 2026 Medicare Part D costs are as follows. Initial coverage deductible is up to $615 for 2026 and changes each year. Initial coverage has 6 drug tiers. The Part D plan pays its share of your cost of the cost for your drugs, and you pay your share until the amount of your out-of-pocket maximum is met. For 2026, $2,100 is the out-of-pocket maximum. Then you move into the catastrophic coverage stage and pay $0. Remember, when you go through TrumpRx or other discount platforms such as GoodRx or Amazon Pharmacy to get discounts on your brand name or generic prescriptions, the cost you pay will not count toward your $2,100 out-of-pocket maximum for 2026. Catastrophic coverage. There is $0 out-of-pocket once a Medicare beneficiary enters the catastrophic coverage stage by meeting the $2,100 minimum. Medicare will pick up all costs of the prescriptions, whether brand name or generic, with a standalone Medicare Part D plan or a Medicare Advantage with a Part D plan included. On January 1st of each year, the process starts all over again with a new Medicare prescription drug plan and new initial deductible and maximum initial coverage limit that leads you to the catastrophic coverage stage. If you're concerned about paying the $2,100 maximum out of pocket, use the Medicare Prescription Payment Plan, a payment option that began January 1st, 2025, to help manage your out-of-pocket drug costs by spreading your monthly prescription drug costs throughout the year from January to December. For more information about the payment plan, visit Medicare.gov or call your Medicare Part D plan. It is important for those enrolling in Medicare to know how to open a Medicare.gov account, which has your Medicare information, before enrolling in a Medicare Part D plan, whether a standalone Part D plan or a Medicare Advantage plan with Part D included, like the one that you, Mike, are enrolled in. Once you have opened your Medicare.gov account, you can go online and begin searching for your prescription drug plan by clicking on Find Health and Drug Plans and following the steps. Remember, with Medicare, what you don't know will hurt you. And that was an advice piece by Tony King, who you can email info@tonysays.com for advice from. And it looks like that is actually all the time we have for this reading of the Salem News. Thank you so much for listening to the Talking Information Center. And I hope you have a wonderful rest of your day.